I wanted to keep my co-host in suspense, so I waited very long to intro this podcast. Welcome to episode 14 of the 51-yard line. Drew is already in tears. You know it's going to be a good show.
That did not take long.
We got a lot to discuss today. We've got the Final Four. We've got Kevin Durant out the rest of the year and some other fun stuff, including trivia, which everybody loves.
Who doesn't?
And the madness.
So let's get it going. As always, I'm one of your hosts, Tyler Berry. To my left, the incomprehensible Drew Willers.
Trying to keep it together for all of you out there. Thanks for listening.
To my other left, the series regular, if you will, Christian Schneider. What's up,
Kaminsky?
Buddy?
Kaminsky!
Schneider.
Frank. And, as always, to my third left, the man, the myth, the dickhead, Steve Cravens.
What's going on, everybody?
Well, guys, we got a lot to get into. I don't want to waste any more time than I've already wasted. So, Steve, what's going down?
Well, I couldn't help but notice that the Thunder got devastating news.
Devastating news?
They got devastating news.
The bad kind.
Yeah, the kind that makes you want to shit your pants when you hear it. I guess good old Kevin Durant is out 4 to 6 months. Kevin Durant.
Who?
Kevin Durant.
Kevin Durant.
Kevin Durant. Mr. Durant is out 4 to 6 months, and it's not
funny, but
no, it is not.
Well, you know, it sucks, man. I mean, how many video games can you play for 4 to 6 months? You know,
it's true.
Anyway,
a lot. You can play Bloodborne for 4 to 6. Sorry, that's a different podcast.
I mean,
never mind.
Yeah, but your foot sucks, so it's like, yeah, this is fun. Oh, my foot sucks. Anyway, but he's getting bone grafts done.
Bone grafts.
So my question to you guys is: now that he's out 4 to 6 months, what does this do to his relationship with the Thunder, who I imagine are already getting a little testy with how many times he's been out? He hasn't had too many issues with this in the past. I think he's only missed in his entire NBA career, I believe, 18 games to injury. Excuse me.
Sorry, man. It happens.
Yeah, demons. But anyway, so it hasn't really happened to him too much before, but this is big. This is pretty big. So what does this do to his relationship with the Thunder, and what does this mean for Russell Westbrook now that he is indisputably top dog on campus for a long time to come?
That's a very interesting question. It's a very good question. With all the things all the little rumors here and there that we've been hearing, like, is Kevin Durant leaving? Is he going to D.C.? It's more plausible, I should say, than it's ever been in the past, just because of the kind of season that this has been.
The conversation between the front office and Kevin Durant when he does inevitably become a free agent.
Do you have one more year on his contract? Or
something
is this
like
his,
that.
Is
we're getting pretty close.
He's a free agent in 2016. Yeah.
Okay, so he's got one more year on his contract.
So, based upon potentially how next season goes, I mean, if he can't stay on the floor for an extended period of time, and Russ Westbrook can, because there's, I would say it's at a point now where it's indisputable that the face of OKC is Russell Westbrook.
Definitely this year,
absolutely this year,
and I don't see that changing going into next year at all, unless Durant can prove that he can stay on the floor for a long period of time. So it'll make things super, super interesting, I think, when the time comes that Kevin Durant has to become a free agent. What is he going to want? What does he think he deserves? And what does the front office think that he deserves based upon how much he's been able to play down the stretch here? Have we seen the best out of him? And that's the other thing. Have we seen the best from Kevin Durant? Is he going to be able to return to MVP form?
Doctors are being very optimistic about it.
Yeah,
right.
They know more than anybody, but I mean, I don't think it's fair to say something like that because it's unique to every single person who has this kind of problem. But going back to Westbrook being the king in OKC, on ESPN they actually mentioned something really interesting. They're like, think about it. You know, Kevin Durant was the king for so long. I mean, pretty much since he got there, right? I mean, no one's ever really challenged his throne.
No.
Then Westbrook comes in. He starts, he really competes. He's the Robin to...
Durant was the face of the franchise in Seattle. So, I mean, he kind of just inherited that role.
Exactly. Exactly. And then Westbrook came in and, you know, was very clearly the Robin to his Batman.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the thing. Now that Durant's out, now that Westbrook's king, even if Durant comes back, I mean, what kings do you know throughout history that were like, oh, the other guy's back? Oh, let me step down quietly while he retakes the throne. Not many. So, I don't think Westbrook is going to give up his position as the face of the franchise now that that is indeed the case.
True,
it's
but
gonna
I
be interesting
think,
to see.
True, but I don't think Westbrook's gonna do anything to keep Durant from getting his. Like, they're both supportive teammates. I don't think it's gonna become an issue between the both of them. I think it's strictly going to be an issue between the front office and Durant.
I'll tell you this much though. I mean, I honestly think that that Russell Westbrook taking the mantle from Durant started even before this year. I mean, watching the playoffs last year, Durant was the MVP, but Russell Westbrook was the guy with the ball in his hands closing games.
It's very
out.
True.
Now that has to do with him being the point guard. But, I mean, he was the one taking the big shots, not Durant. And, I mean, there were a lot of games there where Durant was locked up and Westbrook had to carry the load. He was the best player on that team in the playoffs by far.
Without a doubt.
I mean, I'm not disagreeing, but Serge Ibaka also made a huge... We saw his contribution.
Well, when he came
back.
We saw his contribution when the Spurs were 2-0 against them. And then, mm-hmm. like, just through pure desperation, they brought Ibaka back. And then all of a sudden it was 2-2.
Yeah,
that's when you know how valuable someone is to your, you know, to your team. Oh, but yeah. But anyway, going back to Westbrook, I mean, I really do think, like you say, that you know they're teammates that really like each other, that they admire each other. They've never been in this kind of situation before. Westbrook's never been in this kind of situation before. Durant's never been in this kind of situation before. So I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm not saying that you know what I'm saying is going to happen is right. But all I'm saying is that I could see there being some controversy in that locker room.
See, I just don't see them having those kinds of egos. I and I've been dead wrong before about athletes and their egos and what I expect them to do and not to do.
Mm-hmm.
Read Adrian Peterson, but that's sure. a different yeah. discussion. But I just, given their relationship, given what they've been able to accomplish together, especially without James Harden, what they've had to be able to do together, I just don't. I think the mutual respect factor is too strong. I don't think it's going to be an issue between Westbrook and Durant. I think it's really going to become more of an issue between the front office and Durant.
Yeah.
And I, you know, depending on how things go next year, it wouldn't be super difficult for me to see, you know, OKC wanting to kind of let, maybe if he's asking for too much and he can't stay on the field, letting Durant walk. We're trying to work out a trade before the contract expires and try to see if there's
anybody
willing to buy.
That's what I think that they would try to do.
They've got pieces there. You know, Durant could turn into two really, really good assets.
And that's the other thing that sucks about this injury is, you know, like, as far as I've read, it's 4 to 6 months, right? Like, Durant's done. Like,
he's,
for the Red,
oh,
like,
for this
done.
Year, absolutely.
This year is completely over, regardless of postseason hopes.
No.
So as OKC, here's the shitty part. You go to the postseason, you're not going all, if you go all the way, more power to you. But you're not going all the way.
Not with the mighty Warriors.
And how are you? I mean, and I'm not saying you can improve, but it makes improving through the draft so much more difficult in the NBA.
Yeah.
If you don't have a top pick, I mean, how often do top five guys never turn out? I mean,
well,
in the NBA,
more often than you think.
Really?
Well, I mean, the Anthony Bennett draft certainly comes to
mind. No, I mean, but I'm just saying recently,
Anthony
I feel like...
Bennett, fucking...
I don't know, and maybe that's just more
Kwame
poor...
Brown.
Yep. Oliver Candy.
Yeah, Michael Oliver Candy.
I don't know
that's
if it's... And maybe it's
or
just
Yanni.
More a matter of making, no. you know, poor decisions from the front office than anything else, and that's why it doesn't pan out. But, I mean, I can't think of any guys that went, you know, 27, 26 or whatever that... ended up making a drastic impact.
Oh, well, there
right
were a bunch of those. I mean, Tony Parker,
right away,
Manu Ginobili, they I mean, they were even lower than that.
Weren't they second round?
Yeah, they were,
yeah.
both of them. I mean, now that, to be fair, that's the Spurs getting European, so that's
yeah,
a bit
yeah.
different.
Right,
but,
international.
Yeah, they're playing, they're system players. I mean, you know.
Which seems to be a growing trend now. Like,
yeah.
if you can't, if you don't have a top five pick, a top three pick, it seems to be you're going international now. It seems to be that's where most teams seem to be wanting to try and find.
Unless you luck out with like a mid-round like 12 to 16 pick like Paul George or
yep.
Trey Burke or...
We can still get guys so relatively young over in Europe ball, too.
It's true.
So...
Right.
Well, but that's...
And they got pro experience, too.
Exactly.
Getting back to the point, what I would see happening, what my prediction is that next season, or in the off season, I think we start hearing little bits and pieces, like here and there, about whether they're rumors or whether they're true. Like, we're going to hear like about OKC shopping Durant around.
We'll definitely hear that. We'll definitely,
and he'll we'll be definitely he's obviously going to be linked to his hometown. He's going to be linked to the Wizards. Right. There's just no question.
Do they have the cap room for that in DC?
I could see them trading like a Brad Beal.
Yeah.
And maybe a draft pick for Kevin Durant.
Dude, Wall and Durant are that.
That's a weapon right there.
If Durant
can stay healthy. Yeah. Like, that is scary.
I mean, they'd still have to clear some more space, you know, to accommodate Durant.
Well, and it just seems the way Wall likes to operate is he slashes to the bucket and kick out, and that's what Durant is going to be perfect for.
I mean, think about it, that's what Westbrook does. I mean, and exactly. That's worked out great, you know.
Except Westbrook shoots more than he kicks these days.
Right, exactly.
Rightfully so, how many since Durant's
triple,
out.
But. Sorry, I don't mean to interrupt. How many triple-doubles does he have now?
Isn't 10? It 10?
This year?
Holy yeah!
Oh, no.
He's got at least 10.
He got
10.
One taken away.
Oh, he did.
Yeah.
Oh,
screw that. There was a last-minute stat change. He got one taken away, so I think it's still 9.
9?
But that's still fucking amazing.
Unbelievable.
It's still absolutely amazing.
When was the last time
someone
did that? It's got to be Magic and Bird, right?
Especially when he's dropping, like, 42, 45. Yeah. It's nuts.
He's an absolute insane human being right now. I don't know that he's... I don't think he's human.
No question.
He's like the Monstar in Space Jam who took Muggsy Bogues' powers.
Yep.
So he's that guy.
He is undisputed, I think, the face of OKC Thunder. I think that I would consider him the leader of that team. No question.
This year, absolutely. In years past, it's Durant.
No,
but
that's what I'm saying. I think this seems to be the changing this like as
changing
of now
of the guard.
This, yeah, I truly believe like
I could see it. I could see that.
He's just playing so confidently aggressive. Like
he always had, but like this season.
Oh no,
a whole
he totally
other
is. But it's gotten to a point where he's just unconscious.
Yeah. Like it's. I think it's because
he knows what he wants to do when he's taking the ball up the floor,
and he knows where it's on his shoulders. Like carrying this team is on his shoulders.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not. No insult to the other players on the team, but like he's carrying their weight. So
he's elevated from a star to a superstar.
Absolutely.
This year.
Absolutely.
Like before you could argue that he still had like last season even you could argue that like he had the rudiments, like everything that he needed to be a superstar, but he wasn't quite there yet just cuz he took a lot of like ill-advised shots in late game situations that he didn't need to take, that he shouldn't have taken, when he should have passed the ball more. But this year, undisputed, just what he's been doing, especially the second half of the season, superstar. Just superstardom. That's what he's at right now.
I think the same could be said for Curry and Harden, too. This is like the birth of guys who, if you know the NBA, if you follow your teams, you know who they are, obviously. But for people who are just, you know, just in passing, you just hear their names. I mean, like, now they know who they are. It's incredible. Like, I mean, usually every once in a while you'll have a player that's the talk of the season. You know, we have three players that are the talk of the season, and for once, it's not LeBron James. I mean, that's incredible. I mean, these guys, what all three guys are doing is incredible, but Russell Westbrook in particular, that's something special. I mean, that's otherworldly.
You bring up another point that I've been thinking about is I can't remember the last time we had an MVP race between three guys that was this close between all three guys.
I'd say
like
93. I mean, that's when Barkley beat Jordan. Barkley won the MVP. Jordan was the top dog. Ewing was in the race,
right.
David Robinson and Akeem.
Yeah, and you could argue
that was more of a two-man race.
That's a good point. I would argue that I would argue that 97 was that people would say
Jordan and Malone.
People would say 97, but I think it's ridiculous that Malone even won that. Yeah. The Bulls were what? They won 69
wins
games.
Instead of 72 the year before.
69 games, you don't give the MVP to Jordan. Come the fuck on.
Well, Jordan crushed
no
him in the finals and reminded him of that.
No one was even thinking about Karl Malone until Jackie McMillan wrote a piece in, I think it was for Sports Illustrated, and she was just like, hey guys, what about Karl Malone? And then everyone was like, hey, yeah, he's different. Let's give him the MVP. That was Jordan's year all year. But I think if you want to argue that 97 was the last time we had like two players that were that close, you could argue it. I disagree. I'd say 93, like you said. Yeah. But it's interesting. I could see any of those three, Curry, Westbrook, Harden, winning, and I wouldn't be mad about any of them.
Nah, I'm with you.
I still think if the Warriors win 68 games and it's a Michael Jordan situation where Steph Curry brings that team to that many wins, you have to give it to Curry.
Yeah.
If you go 68-14, 69-13, come the fuck on. You have to give him the MVP.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would agree.
All right. Well, Steve, you brought up something interesting last night. We don't have to talk too long about it, but you read a really interesting article recently. You can go ahead and cite the source for me because I want to give credit where credit is due. But
it was just on ESPN.
It was on ESPN. Well, why don't you talk about it for a minute? Because I thought this was something that we should really touch on.
Well, it was just basically a carve up job of the Eastern Conference, and they were talking about all the teams that are basically fighting for their lives to get into the playoffs right now, and how all of them will finish with more than likely losing records. And they were talking about, for example, how the Milwaukee Bucks are number 6 right now in the Eastern Conference, and they could be facing a losing season with the rest of their schedule and the way they've been playing. And then they made mention of the 6th seed in the Western Conference, and it's the defending NBA champs. So it goes to show you just, I don't know.
The
I don't know.
Parody.
They said they're just it's a downright joke. The unfair distribution of talent and star power on the West compared to the East is just unbelievable. And not only that, I mean, to this day, I still don't know why the West is so stacked compared to the East. I don't know how it got that way. I don't know if it's just, trades and draft picks or what, but they basically
just more big market teams.
Yeah, bigger cities, I guess. I mean, more popularity with the sport of basketball, I guess. But they were talking about how Adam Silver's new idea that we brought up earlier about, the top teams in general should be the ones to go to the playoffs, not just the top teams in each conference. It makes that case stronger than ever, I think, because you look at what these guys
do right now. Yeah,
but as of late, I did say that I am a big proponent for changing it up that way, and I guess I still am. But I've had a hesitation about it because I've seen the way the Celtics have been playing, the Pacers have been playing, the Heat have been playing, the Nets, the Hornets, even the Pistons. Seeing how hard they're playing, how much heart they're giving in, how all of them are, injured, just fighting teams that are better than they are and winning. I'm not so sure if now I can say, yeah, you know what, they don't deserve it, because they might have lost a lot of games through the course of the season, but with hard-fought battles, they're still showing heart and they're still showing, they're showing resilience. I'm not so sure anymore that it's such a clean-cut case that, like, yes, those teams that, didn't have the winning records, they should be out the window, because if you fight hard enough and you want it bad enough, you should be entitled to it. So I don't know. I'm a little, even though they did call out the Eastern Conference being a complete joke and, being an embarrassment to the NBA, and it has been this way for a long time.
Yeah.
And it probably will be for a long time to come. I don't know if that made me defensive just because my team's in the Eastern Conference or what, but at the same time, they're spewing nothing but the truth.
I guess the main thing, the thing that's about the topic in general, the one glaring thing that really sticks out to me is how often we talked about it. If 8 seeds actually did beat 1 seeds in the NBA more, I would probably be, I would be a little bit, less, resistant to, I guess, the change of it, but I'm totally open to the change of it, because I just think it doesn't happen. And in the NBA, you need the best squads in the playoffs. I just think you need that.
Yeah,
it's not like baseball it's not like baseball where you can win 88, sneak in the back door in a wild card, get hot and run it. It's not like football where you're the yep. Giants and you sneak in and then you beat the undefeated Patriots.
Or the Ravens.
It's just not exactly. Yeah. It's just not. It is. Basketball is not that sport. And I don't know what needs to change about the NBA in order to, help restore the balance between the two conferences. But until that happens, I think you just need to have the best squads going in. I that's what I want to watch as a fan of basketball.
Right.
I'm of the opinion that I'm not really sure why conferences even matter that much.
Right.
I think you could get rid of conferences and just go with one conference, but still split up into four-team divisions.
You could find a way to seed it out,
I'm sure. I mean, the whole reason we have conferences is what? For transportation?
Right.
For the most convenience? That's not an issue
You can
anymore.
Still schedule it the convenient way for transportation. You don't necessarily need the conferences. Right. It's just a way for them to be like, all right, this is how many games you're playing against the teams closer to you, as opposed to how many games you're playing against the teams that are way farther away. Like, I think you can make an argument for just getting rid of conferences altogether.
Yeah, and I mean, just set it up like a March Madness bracket.
Why not?
Just the seeds.
Why not?
There's no reason not to. There really isn't. And I mean, that way we would get, a much, much better, potential NBA Finals. I mean,
I will say, and to your, to your squad's credit, Steve, Wade and Heat are starting to make it a little bit more interesting. That if they do get invited to the dance, they're not going to be exactly the best partners. Like, they're not going to roll over on anybody. They're going to make it really, really difficult. So,
especially if it's LeBron and the Cavs.
And that would make it very worthwhile. But
which the article did say, they're like, if this happens, where the Cavs are number two and the Heat are number seven, we're going to take back a little bit of what we said, because that's going to be the stuff of magic there to watch that happen.
Well, and at this point right now, it's just like, I'm sorry. Wade has got LeBron figured out. And I don't mean that in a way that we're like, one-on-one, LeBron would take it to Wade. I think right now where they're at, just with Wade and his age and just LeBron being the physical specimen that he is. I'm not saying that. I'm saying that Wade has spent so much time with LeBron and has been a teammate of LeBron and a competitor against LeBron that he knows what LeBron wants to do and knows how to defend a LeBron offense when he's not covering LeBron.
Yeah.
He's found ways to get the Heat in general seem to have that figured out. They know what LeBron wants to do and they know how to make him less of a factor. He attacks the basket way less when he's playing the Heat.
Yep.
LeBron does not attack the basket with reckless abandon when he's playing the Heat. At least not that I see.
He's just attacking the basket less.
He settles.
Kyrie attacks the basket.
Right. Like, that's true. But I just feel like in general, though, when he's playing the Heat, they're making him settle for perimeter jumpers. And granted, those aren't, walks in the park with LeBron either. I mean, he's obviously got the range, but I just... Yeah, no, that would be... So to the credit of the Heat, like, losing record, winning record, wherever they are, wherever they end up, as far as seeding goes, I would like them to be a part of the... They are a team I would like to be a part of the playoff picture, for sure.
And I hope they are. After all the effort they've, turned in, I think they deserve... I wish Chris Bosh was in the mix, and I wish...
That would be really interesting now. Yeah. If CB was in the mix.
If Chris Bosh was in and Hassan Whiteside didn't have a laceration to his hand and all that stuff.
Because then if you really look at it, if you look at like how the Heat would match up against Cleveland, you've got Cleveland's big three. Well, essentially they're big two because Love cannot seem to find a role in that offense at all. But,
it's because he's garbage.
Goran Dragic is a good offensive match for Kyrie in the sense that they have similar styles of play. Obviously, Kyrie is, if you were starting a team, you would want to have Kyrie over Goran Dragic. But Dragic brings an element to that offense. You've got Wade and LeBron. And then if you've got Bosh stretching Love out and taking big guys away from the bucket, allowing Dragic and
Mozgov, right?
Seriously, man. Then you got Hassan Whiteside. That would have been, that'd be a good
surprise. That was the great surprise of watching that, Cavs Heat game when they were playing in Miami. I mean, Hassan Whiteside just totally neutralized Mozgov. I mean, he was just in his face. Just mm-hmm. Wade was stealing the ball from LeBron left, right, and center. I mean, it was crazy. I mean, obviously, they're going to play the Cavs later this week in Cleveland. I think we're going to lose just because the Cavs, when they're in Cleveland, they're pretty much unbeatable. But we've beaten them both times in Miami. So it makes it interesting because, you know, obviously in the playoffs, you have to go back and forth to the other guy's court. And that's what I'm saying. I mean, like, just because you have a losing record, I mean, take a look at your Celtics here. They have a losing record, but you know what? They're playing their ass off.
Yeah.
And they're still incredible threats, and they don't really have any name guys on there. I mean, like, what, Isaiah Thomas?
Isaiah Thomas is sweet. I mean, though. But Tyler, you were right about him. He's really fun to watch.
Yeah,
I really like
the way that kid plays.
So, you know, I guess it's right. Like, I mean, the teams with the best records probably do deserve to go to the playoffs. I mean, I would be pretty pissed off if I had a better record than some guy in the East, and they ended up going. But at the end of the day, man, I don't know. I still firmly believe if you're putting in the effort and you're putting in all that heart and soul, I mean, I think you deserve it. You play all season long for it, you deserve it. So, I don't know. That article on the East is completely true, but I don't know. It kind of made me a lot more sympathetic to the teams in the East, though. Because, I mean, it was a grilling.
You know what's funny that I just wanted to bring up real quick? You were just mentioning that you're about to play the Cavs. Even if you lose, both the Heat and the Pacers will have split season series with the Cavs. They're a beatable team.
Oh, yeah. Of course. Yeah, they are a beatable team. Yeah.
We both are losing record squads who have just been just demolished with injury at one point or another in the season. We've split the season series with the Cavs. They're a beatable team.
I'm going to be completely honest with you. The lack of Love's lack of ability to find an identity within that offense is going to sink them, I think, in the playoffs. I think it could be what does it.
That's
I'm not
when you need literally everyone to step up, and he's not going to do it.
I mean, but not only even – yes, you need them to step up, but you need them to step up not only in just knowing their role in the offense, but if you can't even trust him – like, they bench him late in games, close games.
Yeah.
If you can't depend on one of the best, who's supposed to be the best scorer, one of the best scorers in the NBA to be on the floor because you're not comfortable with him in the offense, I'm sorry. You're going to have mismatch problems. It's going to happen.
Yeah.
And everything is so, I mean, it's like in anything. Once you get to a postseason in any sport, everything is amplified. Everything.
Last thing I really want to bring up real quick. Rodney Stuckey, Sixth Man of the Year. Can I get an amen on that?
Be honest I don't know who else would be a candidate. So
he's been a monster for the Pacers.
He has
with
been
Paul George
good.
Out.
Yeah,
yeah, man. I guess who else
better than I think anybody in civilized society? Dreamed
yeah, yeah. Nope. Has been no, no really kidding. Good. Like no one thought Rodney Stuckey was going to do anything on.
I
this
don't
team.
Think anybody thought the Pacers were going to be able to. Thing, yeah,
we're not doing well, but we're in the hunt, and that's something.
That 9-game win streak really did miracles for you guys. I mean,
yeah.
Obviously, the 6-game losing streak didn't do too much, but that 9-game losing streak did. I mean,
we're only a half game out, man.
That could put you in there. I mean, like, I actually saw another thing on ESPN that they had the likelihood of the teams that are below 7-8 to get to the 8th seed, and the Pacers are the favorite. I believe Boston is the second favorite, and Charlotte is the fourth, and the Nets were the third at the time, and obviously they're in now.
Lopez is blowing up. The Nets have got a much better shot.
They bitch slapped the Cavs.
Yeah.
And they did it, you know, with style, too. So the Cavs are definitely beatable, and they will be beaten if they make it to the finals.
This last 2 weeks of the season, it's going to be very interesting.
Dogfight.
It's going to be crazy. All right, let's move on to my new favorite segment, 51 Questions.
Yes.
Oh,
that's our trivia segment. This is the third out of 51 that we're doing. So standings are right now, Christian and Drew are tied in the lead with 2.
Whee!
Steve Cravens plugging along right behind him with 1 point. Today's question... It's not in your guys' expertise, but I think if you think about it for a second, the answer is very obvious.
I don't know. I'm a few beers deep. This is going to be interesting. I'm pretty excited to see what this is.
Guys, tonight's question is, who is the only national team to qualify for all 20 World Cups. Four multiple choice answers. You pick the right one. Is it A, the Netherlands? Is it B, the Brits? Is it C, good old United States? Or is it D, Brazil?
I have no idea, but I'm gonna go with the Brits.
The Brits? That's what I'm going with. Is that your final answer?
I mean, I've been hearing how great soccer is in Britain, so if it's not them, I'm not gonna be so bummed at myself for not getting it right. I mean, I love the Dutch, so go Netherlands. Other than that, but it, I mean, I guess I'm going. Well, fuck. What's his name? Pele play in Brazil?
Yeah.
Oh shit. Now I gotta think about that.
I'm going Brazil.
You're going Brazil, Steve?
Yep.
Final answer?
Yep.
Okay.
I think I'm going Brazil as well. I think it's my final answer. Partly because of the way that the World Cup, I'm not an expert, but I'm pretty sure the World Cup is largely done in terms of region. You gotta win out in your, like, you know, your continental tournament. In which case, Brazil is definitely dominant in South America. And mm-hmm. I mean, you know, England's coming out of Europe, which is loaded.
Mm-hmm. Interesting way to.
I think that's what I'm going with. Also, because I just don't remember a time that Brazil didn't make it. At mm-hmm. least.
All right.
So, yeah, I gotta say
Brazil. Final answer.
Final answer.
All right, Drew.
Brazil, going with Brazil.
Going with Brazil.
Brazil.
God, man. You guys. That's the correct answer.
Yeah.
Brazil. Brazil is the only team to ever be in all 20 World Cups.
Because it's definitely not the U.S.
No.
That one was immediately like...
I had to give you one easy like elimination.
But deep down, you were like, I hope one of these noobs says America.
I really wanted one of you
you're
to
like,
say
I
America.
You're like, I want it on tape that one of these guys thought it was America.
Christian gave the best explanation.
No, that was...
And I hadn't even thought of it like that, but yeah.
Right.
That's a... Yeah.
Makes sense.
They're doing the Euro 2016 qualifiers right now. Woo! So in the spirit of that,
gotcha.
As a huge soccer fan, I wanted to put that question in the mix. So good job, guys.
There it is.
You all get a point.
Yes.
Well done, gentlemen. Well done.
We know sports as of right now.
Sports ball.
We're moving along.
Hashtag sports ball.
Hashtag goal scores.
All right.
Hashtag point goals.
Jesus. Okay, just losing credibility for this podcast as we speak. Hashtag
pear-shaped. You're 3 for 3, man. Just let that lie.
It's going pear-shaped here.
Good.
All right, well, let's move on. I'm impressed. I did not expect everyone to get that question. But let's move on to, guys, our Final Four for 2015 is set.
Stacked, you mean?
It's stacked.
It is.
That's a good final
four. For those of you listening who, I don't know, haven't been near a TV recently, the final four matchups are number one Duke takes on number seven Michigan State. And your overall number one Kentucky Wildcats take on the Wisconsin Badgers.
Our chance to prove if we know basketball. We've our all chance Wisconsin to beaten Kentucky.
Chance to not eat my goddamn hat over this entire Kentucky situation. Because if they go on to win the entire thing, they're two games away from it right now. I'm going to have to do something because I've said since the beginning of this podcast that I didn't think that they were going to be able to go all the way undefeated.
Yep.
You have to wear an I Heart University of Kentucky shirt.
You know what? I will.
Big face.
I'll do out of respect. If they end up winning, I'll absolutely wear a Kentucky shirt.
That's the thing is that this isn't easy. This is damn near impossible. I truly believe if they do it, it's... I'm not going against anything that I thought.
No team has started a season 38-0 because the last team to win it, Indiana, I think
they didn't play that many games.
They only played 34 games.
I think it was 34.
Yeah.
So if Kentucky does, I mean, if they do it, and if they do go undefeated and they do the impossible, I will gladly say I'm wrong. That's great. That's great for sports. We need stuff like that.
No, you're right. It's secretly exciting. Part of me wants them to win, but most of me doesn't.
And that's the thing is, at the point, you know, I guess, I don't know. This is going to sound kind of stupid, I think. But had they lost in the regular season or at any point in the SEC tournament and then gotten to the dance and just steamrolled, I don't know if the games would carry as much weight, but the games carry so much more weight now because they are undefeated. And it is,
right.
Regardless of how good they are and how good they've proven, the fact that they have to, that they are still trying to maintain perfection adds so much more weight to these games. Yeah. And so they don't necessarily, especially now here when you're playing a team like Wisconsin that is battle-tested.
Oh, yeah.
That is as talented, almost as talented as you are on paper.
And has waited all year for this game.
Absolutely.
They should have beat him last year.
Yep.
Aaron Harrison hit this freak 30-footer to knock him out.
Stunning.
And they have been waiting for this game for about 365 days. I'm so in it. They're playing at the exact same point in time. The national semifinal, chance to play for the title.
It's going to be an amazing game. It's going to be an amazing freaking game.
Right, I know. And I mean, you guys are right. It's fascinating to see just like the pressure build as every team just feels like, every team that plays Kentucky feels like a team of destiny. We're going to be the ones to get them. I hate every second of it because I cannot stand Kentucky. I cannot stand John Calipari. I think he's, as far as a team potentially going undefeated, yes, I think that is good for college basketball. As far as John Calipari potentially going undefeated, I hate it. This is a guy who ruined two different programs before he came to Kentucky.
Well, he is
left one.
He's
foot
just a sleazy, sleazy human
being.
He is,
and it's not even. It's not his affect or his slick back hair, though that certainly doesn't help. But what it comes down to is the guy left two programs in shambles. He was one step ahead of the cops, and he still got the job at the crown jewel of college basketball, which is Kentucky.
Pete Carroll.
Mark
shit.
My words. Mark
yeah,
my
exactly.
words.
Pete Carroll shit.
Exactly.
Mark my words. He will leave Kentucky before this whatever scandal breaks. Because is a scandal. I'm sorry.
I think so.
I can't. I.
All those
there's
high
a scandal.
Prospects. All those rich Kentucky boosters. Whether he knew about it or not, I mean, let's put it this way. If people are going to be getting Marcus Camby at University of Massachusetts, you know, junk, they're getting these Kentucky kids something.
Oh,
I mean,
hell yeah.
I mean, listen, I don't have anything to prove.
No, neither
but,
do I.
But, like, it just doesn't smell right.
It just doesn't.
But at the same time, this team is unbelievable good, and you cannot argue with the product they're putting on the floor.
When it sounds like
very true.
They're unselfish. There's no ego to that team, and they're all such stars. But
the ego on that team is John Calipari,
right? I mean, you know, in a way, his ego is huge because he's bigger than any of his players. But I mean, listen, those guys are all Karl Anthony Towns would be the best player in the country were he on any other team.
But because he's got Willie Cauley-Stein right next to him,
yep.
Because he's got the Harrison twins.
Yep.
Because he's got Tyler Ulis.
Oh, yeah. He's averaging like 11-7.
He'd be averaging 18-12.
Easily.
For any other top tier Division I team.
I mean, I'd be shocked if he didn't average at least 20. I mean, the guy, he's a finisher inside. He's a load.
He's a
and he can
scary,
make, and
scary
unlike
man.
Jahlil Okafor, he can make free throws.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You can put him on the line in a late game situation and trust that he's actually going to come through for you.
Right.
While we're on the subject of Coach Calipari, two questions. He didn't win Coach of the Year. Did you think he deserved that?
My bias is just no, because I don't like him.
Okay.
But if we're getting past the bias,
it's hard to say because he's got so much talent and he did, to be fair, come through a pretty weak conference. You know, he's got tools that nobody in America can come close with to work.
That's
so
valid.
When people get, you know, results anywhere close to that with much less, I can understand why that.
Refresh
I wouldn't
my
have
memory,
given
who did win Coach of the Year?
I'm not sure if they've come out with it yet, have they?
I don't know.
Oh.
I mean, I wasn't aware. I mean, I know, I think, I'm positive Bo Ryan got the Big Ten. But I don't think I've heard.
Well, I'd heard grumblings about how Coach Cal had not won Coach of the Year in something, and that Obviously, Kentucky was ticked.
Yeah, because I'm not positive they've come out with the Wooden and Naismith awards yet, have they?
Yeah,
they haven't come out with those yet. But
well, those would be the top. I mean, I guess he would be getting AP Coach of the Year. Gotcha. At this point.
Well, it was something he didn't win something. I don't know. Maybe I missed.
Yeah,
that.
Maybe he didn't get
SEC
it.
Coach of the Year or
something like that.
I mean, I'd be shocked if he didn't get that.
Yeah,
but I can see that.
Or maybe it was just maybe the article was just them talking about like maybe there were rumors that he wouldn't win it and people were scoffing at the fact that he wouldn't because he obviously would. But yeah. Second question, he said that Kentucky absolutely did not face their toughest challenge against Notre Dame. Lots of people looked at that as classless against Notre Dame. Did you feel that way?
Personally,
I did not. I looked at it as a coach trying to motivate his team.
I don't know. Trying to
be like, you guys did not play your best ball. I need you to play your best ball because this is the time of the year that I need you to play your best ball. Whether he felt like Notre Dame was or was not, I mean, I don't feel like it was a knock on Notre Dame. I felt like it was a coach trying to rally his guys.
No, I don't think he's trying to disrespect Notre Dame, but I do disagree. They definitely got their best challenge with Notre Dame because that was the only game this year I have watched where I watched that game and I thought Kentucky is going to lose. Notre Dame played awesome. They had a lead with 2 minutes left. I mean, I thought Notre Dame had them. They were in the bonus and Kentucky wasn't. And I mean, frankly, I'd love to
just
talk about
a couple calls went Kentucky's way.
But it wasn't just that, though. For what it came down to for me, and I hate to put it on one guy, Jerrion Grant took three horrible shots to end that game. I rewatched the highlights today of just like on the NCAA channel. They just had the last couple of minutes. And the whole game, Notre Dame played Kentucky the exact right way. They spread the floor with shooters. They were scoring in the paint. Zach August was getting dunks at the rim. They were laying it in. Vastori was attacking the hoop. Grant was attacking the hoop. Jackson attacking the hoop. It was awesome. They had a really good game plan, and Notre Dame is just a really well-oiled team. They were executing. And then at the very end of the game, Jerrion Grant just like went off the script, and he dribbled around in circles and then took contested threes. And that's easy for anybody to guard, but it's really easy for Kentucky to guard. And I was just watching this, and I'm just like, oh my gosh. It's just like he just like lost faith in what they were doing. And I really was blown away that he did it, because Jerrion Grant really is like a mentally tough player and who has been great for Notre Dame all year. I just was really, really surprised that he just reverted to hero ball.
And what'd you think about that foul, that blocking foul? Right at the end.
Oh, that's Harrison
to the line.
I actually thought it was a block. Jackson was still moving his feet. He wasn't squared up.
And he also was leaning back. He wasn't square.
Yeah, it was close. And when I saw it live,
I thought it was a bad call.
I thought it was a bad call. Then I saw the replay, and it was the right call.
It was the right call.
But here's the thing. That play right there, dribble drive for the point guard, that's exactly what should have gotten done with Notre Dame. Kentucky went right to the hole, and they got fouled, and they won the game. And I think if Notre Dame had done that, they would have won.
And I also don't think Mike Bray should have taken that last timeout when he did. I think they should have saved that last timeout because they took that timeout right before Kentucky's possession, right? Oh, no. They took the timeout right before that really bad inbounds play with 1 second left on the shot clock.
Right.
They should have floated that ball up in the air off the inbounds pass and at least given them a chance to make a shot.
Right. Right.
Or at least get it toward the rim. Mm-hmm. Like they didn't do anything.
Oh yeah, they never.
It was a wasted. It was a wasted timeout, costing their last timeout, so they weren't able to take one to set something up for that last play. And
it was
what Jerrion Grant took that last shot, right?
The very last shot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he just couldn't get any. He couldn't get a shot
because Willie Cauley-Stein.
Great, unbelievable.
He tracked in the whole length of the court to the corner. That's the thing. And that's something I got to bring up about this next game against Wisconsin. That matchup between, because it's going to be Towns and Kaminsky, matched up. It's going to be Cauley-Stein and Decker. And that is going to be a ridiculous
matchup. That's a really interesting matchup.
Because Cauley-Stein, I don't know if I appreciate it until this Notre Dame game. Cauley-Stein is an incredible perimeter defender. He's really fast. He's long. He's agile. He can really disrupt guards.
It doesn't compute with me how good he is outside of the low block. Like, it doesn't make sense how great of a perimeter defender he actually is.
He's
it's
like,
really
he's like
weird.
Anthony Davis.
But the problem is, who on Wisconsin matches up with him on the blocks?
On the blocks?
Like, who can guard Cauley-Stein down low?
Well, Cauley-Stein's not that great offensively. I mean, as far as post moves, I don't see him getting hot and suddenly getting like 20, 25 points.
Yeah.
And either way, isn't that, and correct me if I'm wrong, the best way to play for Wisconsin to play Kentucky is to try to stretch him out and get him out of the lane. So you know you're not going to want to be playing too much down the low block, at least with a team like Kentucky.
No, but I think you're talking about defending Cauley-Stein on the block, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, gotcha.
Right. Yeah. It's going to be Decker who's going to guard him, but I mean,
I love Decker. He's been a freaking monster lately.
The Arizona game.
I don't know if he's got. Can he defend Cauley-Stein? I don't see it.
I mean, we'll see. I mean, listen, there are going to be plays where Cauley-Stein just like gets a couple of offensive rebound tips.
I was
going to
say, I think you'll see a little bit more offensive efficiency out of Cauley-Stein than you would if he was like down low against like a conventional like big man. Like Wisconsin doesn't have two, it's Kaminsky like down low. Like that's who he's got.
But to be fair, I mean, watching Notre Dame, I mean, Pat Connaughton, he's 6'5" and he was guarding Cauley-Stein, and Cauley-Stein didn't really do a whole lot.
That's a valid point.
Yeah. I mean,
Pat Connaughton's a big, big kid. He's a strong individual.
He played his ass off.
I love that dude. I think he's a fantastic. He's a very underrated player.
I think the main thing that Notre Dame was able to do with the game was to dictate the tempo.
Yep.
And to make sure that they were not going to let Kentucky run and gun and do whatever they want. And I think Wisconsin's built for the same kind of basketball.
It's true. And they're very efficient with their offense. And I'm with you on Decker. I mean, I got to say, it still hurts me a little bit because my heels gave Wisconsin a really good fight
they
in
did.
Sweet 16.
They did.
But Decker closed the deal.
He just hits daggers.
And he was even better in Arizona. Daggers. He bombed them at the end. He had a couple threes where he almost hit the ceiling with the arc on it. It was like, oh my gosh, this guy's in another world right now.
He was just like, just ice in his veins, dude. Yeah. Just all right. I want to move on to the other Final Four game before we get out of here. But I wanted to get everyone's predictions. Who wins this game?
Wisconsin,
Kentucky? Or Wisconsin?
Wisconsin. I believe
you're sticking to your guns.
Oh yeah, okay. No, I'm sticking with my bet. I feel like Notre Dame really was able to expose Kentucky, and on paper, it's pretty indisputable. On paper, Wisconsin looks much better than Notre Dame.
Yeah, no, definitely.
Oh, sure.
And so if you're able to,
if Notre Dame
had
won this game, I'd say Wisconsin would
with
definitely
fatigue,
be
yeah, with yeah, fatigue, yeah. With hype, with revenge being a factor.
That's
I think
the big
just
one.
That's the big.
I think
factor,
there's just
yeah.
I think, and I'm obviously a big Minnesota guy, so it sucks having to give Wisconsin any kind of credit in anything ever,
sure.
ever for me. But I love Bo Ryan. I've always been a big Bo Ryan supporter. I love him as a coach, as a Big Ten guy. And I think Bo Ryan. Take another trip to the Final Four. He's hungry, and he's ready to get a taste of national championship
and
basketball.
So is Frank.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Frank's ready.
That whole Wisconsin team. They were
That's the reason Frank came back.
That's
absolutely.
That's reason, yeah, I mean.
So I just think, whereas long story longer, Christian, you brought up the fact that, you know, every team that plays Kentucky is trying to convince themselves that they are the team of destiny. I think Wisconsin has the upper hand in knowing that they actually are.
Yeah,
and I think they'll prove that.
Yeah, they know their best game can beat Kentucky. And
and I think that's what it really boils down to for me. If Wisconsin plays their best basketball, I just don't think Kentucky can maintain. I think, and I'm sorry, like I might be hitting the homer button a little bit. Big Ten, that is physical basketball.
Yeah,
like
it is.
That's physical basketball.
Definitely,
and that's the way Wisconsin's going to need to play against Kentucky, and I think they're built, and I think they're ready for it.
I mean, I gotta stick to my guns. I'm still going with Wisconsin. I know I made the case a while ago, though. I will put a couple of bullet points to it just because I'm not feeling as good about it right now. That's not because Wisconsin isn't playing well, but looking at them and Kentucky play some full games right in the last couple of weeks, For starters, when I first made the case that's a really big deal about Kaminsky being the big problem for Kentucky, stepping out and shooting the ball, he can shoot spot-up threes, but it's not something he looks for. And, I mean, there were a bunch of times watching him against Arizona where he was going up against Caleb Tarzewski, who he can shoot over and go around all day long. And he didn't have the confidence to step into those threes. And I'd seen them. He can do it. But, I mean, Tarzewski just had to close out a little bit, and Kaminsky avoided it. Kentucky's going to challenge him. And the other thing is Karl Anthony Towns has looked unbelievable good in this tournament. And he's going to muscle Kaminsky. I mean, there were times when Brandon Ashley was scoring on Kaminsky when in the Elite Eight. And if Brandon Ashley can put his head down and muscle through Kaminsky, Towns definitely can. And if he gets Kaminsky into foul trouble, all bets are off. Now, I'm still going with Wisconsin. I'm not abandoning the pick, but they got to play a really good game.
They have to play their best game.
Absolutely. Now, their best game could beat them, but it has to be their best game. So, I'm really looking forward to it.
Me
it's
too.
It's going to be really good.
When is that game?
Next week?
Next
week. Steve, what do you think?
Kentucky.
Yeah.
Oh, he jumped ship.
Okay. You saw some of that game
they're so
last night.
Damn resilient.
Yeah, they do know how to bounce back under pressure.
And I know that's the whole thing we've been talking about is like, how are they going to handle the pressure?
No, absolutely.
No, yeah.
And if you feel that they will, like, you're not alone.
I know,
a lot of brackets out there that got UK.
I'm going Kentucky, I guess. I mean, they just watching that game with Notre Dame. I mean, I actually thought Notre Dame had it for a while.
Yeah,
we all did.
Yeah. God damn it! Oh, I was so disappointed.
Just a couple. God damn.
That would have been the upset in the history of the tournament.
But they came back.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
They won it.
Yep.
Again.
And they didn't tighten up at all. They looked pretty loose. A lot looser than Notre Dame.
That's very true.
And they had a lot more to lose.
So yeah, Kentucky.
Kentucky.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm gonna stick to my prediction from couple weeks ago, going Wisconsin.
Wisconsin?
I think they have to do literally everything right.
Yep.
But I've seen them do literally everything right before, and I think that they can do it again.
Right.
I think Frank will need to hit a couple threes.
Yep.
But most of all, he'll need to be resilient down in the low post.
Yep.
And he'll need to make sure Karl Anthony Towns gets minimal buckets, and if he gets into foul trouble, it's all over. He can't get into foul trouble.
Yeah, because they don't have anybody who can replace him off the bench. Kentucky obviously has Zakari Johnson.
If Frank gets two early fouls first half, consider it over as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
But he's got to play perfect basketball. He's got to play the game that he came back for this year to play.
Yep.
So I'm going Wisconsin. But it's going to be tough.
Yeah, it's time for Kaminsky to prove he's the National Player of the Year. That's what it comes down to.
All right, we spent a lot of time on that. So to be fair, we've got one other game to talk about. Let's spend like 2 or 3 minutes talking about Duke and number 7 Michigan State.
Tom Izzo owns
basketball.
He owns taxes, man. That train is never late.
Jeez, dude.
I'm so impressed with that team.
They're tough, man. That's
the
a tough
Gophers,
team.
And here's the thing. Here's the thing about Tom Izzo that I love. Here's the thing about Big Ten basketball that I adore. Is the Gophers have been so completely well below average this year in basketball. It's been so disappointing what we've seen at the Barn in Minnesota.
Gophers.
It sucks. So to beat Michigan State was a big deal in overtime.
Oh, yeah.
That being said, Michigan State had a meltdown like you would not believe. I mean, it was unbelievable. And I remember I didn't get the chance to watch the game, but I'm looking at updates at work. I'm like, holy shit, we're actually going to beat Michigan State. And the game gets over, and I go and I look at my Bleacher Report app, and they've got a GIF or Vine or whatever of Izzo just shooting. Okay. to set up overtime, there was a 4-point play. We needed 3 to tie, and there was actually a 4-point play. Oh, if we would have hit the free throw, the game would have been over.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, we missed it. We went to overtime. We won anyways. But after the 4-point play, they showed a picture of Izzo, and the look he's giving his entire squad would literally kill a small mammal.
Yeah.
Like, it would literally kill a small, like, squirrel. Like, he...
A.K.A. Travis Trice.
He's so pissed. But that's the thing, is you just knew, you're like, he's going to teach these kids.
Yep.
He's going to get them to figure it out. And they're going to figure it out in the Big Ten tournament, and then they're going to go to the dance.
Yep.
And that this is what happens. Like you said, this train is never late with Tom Izzo.
You knew it was coming too. When they lost the Big Ten championship to Wisconsin, they had him. They had a chance to kill him. They lost the game, but Izzo just, well, you know, he went in the locker room and said, "Wisconsin may very well be the best team in the country besides Kentucky, and you guys played them all the way to the final. You can beat anybody." And I really hope he's right, because I really fucking hate the idea of Duke going to the national championship game.
Oh.
So I need Wisconsin to play Michigan State. To play their best game, I need an all Big Ten final, please.
That would be
that'd be sweet.
That would be fantastic.
I would be super pumped for that.
But that said, oh my God, Duke has looked good.
Duke's scary.
Through this tournament, for the last 4 games, Duke has been the best team in the tournament.
You think so?
Because each and every, the other 3 teams in the Final 4 have all had moments where you've watched the game and thought, wow, I think they're going to lose. Carolina had Wisconsin down, I think, 7 points in the second half.
Yep.
Michigan State had to go to overtime to beat Louisville. They were losing by a lot today. And obviously,
Notre Dame was up 6 on Kentucky there with like 9 minutes left in the second half.
Yeah, and they had a lead with 2 minutes left.
Yeah.
So Duke at no point Duke has not been close to losing at all.
Gonzaga it's funny how low-key it's been, too. Like, no one's been talking about how easily Duke has been sliding through this tournament.
I mean, to be fair, they did have a... And I'm bitching about this because I'm biased as hell, but I did feel like they just rolled out the red carpet for Duke going through that regional. I mean, Gonzaga clearly couldn't measure up.
Are you still?
And that was the best team next to them in the regional.
I think I asked you this the other day off, like not recording, but were we in agreement that we didn't think Duke should be a number one?
Yeah, I mean, I thought going into the tournament, Virginia should have gotten the one over Duke. I thought that they had,
especially after Duke lost
to Notre Dame.
To Notre Dame, And I completely agree. We both agreed on that. I don't think we ever said it on the podcast, but we were not convinced that Duke deserved that number one, and because they've got it.
Yep.
And they've coasted through.
Think about the difference, too. Virginia had to play Michigan State, the team that got red hot and knocked them out of the tournament last year. So that's the difference there. Virginia was looking at Duke's bracket, and then it would have been Duke having to play Michigan State in the second round rather than the Final Four.
And we can easily see Virginia in this spot where Duke's at right now. Not easily, but...
Oh, yeah. I'd have picked them to beat Gonzaga. I'd have picked them to beat Utah. I'd have picked... Oh, yeah.
They just can't score.
They can't score. That's the only problem. Exactly.
Regardless...
To be fair, if they were playing Duke in the semifinal, I might pick Duke to beat them.
I would.
But I think, as far as just earning the seed, I thought Virginia should have got it. Duke got it. But Duke's played like a one seed in this tournament, so hard to argue with that. Because they have been killing it. And the number one guy on that team right now, who is going to be the guy who is the problem for Michigan State, it's not Okafor, it's Justice Winslow.
That guy
is a scary man.
And it's, you know what's scary is that he's gotten better at free throw shooting somehow in this tournament.
Yep.
He's like a 62% free throw shooter.
Hit him when he needed him.
He hit them today when he needed to.
Yep. And he's an incredible defender. He can do everything. He can beat you off the dribble and dunk it. He can shoot threes. He's just really, really, really good.
He is.
And, I mean, you know, when you consider that they've got Okafor, you've got to account for. They've got Winslow, who can just do it all. Then you got a really, really gifted backcourt in Jones and Cook. I mean, if it wasn't for Kentucky, everybody would be talking about how this is Duke's year, frankly. I mean, if Wisconsin gets through and they wind up playing Duke... That's another really hard matchup because, for starters, Duke beat Wisconsin at the Kohl Center this year. And that was very early in the year when Wisconsin had experience and Duke didn't. And Duke's just gotten better. I mean, Wisconsin has too, but Duke's looking really, really good. Michigan State's going to have to do some job to beat them.
It's very true.
I mean, I think Brandon Dawson is going to have to have a really, really big game because he's bigger than Winslow, yeah. And that's the catch there. But, whew, that's a game.
It's going to be a fun game. All right, who are you guys' picks for that game?
Duke. I don't want it to be. I want it to be Michigan State, but I think it's going to be Duke.
I mean, you know, my pick is always my head over my heart, so I got to pick Duke, but oh my God, I hate every bit of that.
Just to be different, Michigan State.
I hope so. I'll
I like
right,
it.
Man.
I hope you're right, too.
That, I mean, listen, if anybody can put a really – because here's the thing. Michigan State is a really tough team. They're a physical team. You know, they could shove Duke off their, you know, off their comfort zone. And that's the way they're going to have to beat them. It's going to have to be a grinded out, gritty, ugly game. I mean, Michigan State loves that. Duke hates it.
A Big Ten, it's true. A Big Ten national championship game would make me feel so much better about how shitty the Gophers were.
Yeah.
It would make me feel so much better.
Well, I got to go.
They weren't golden?
They were not. They were, hey. They were very, very much not golden.
What
Gopher-y.
You did.
Against what I want to happen, I have to go Duke.
Yeah.
They're just a better team. Yeah. And frankly, they haven't been tested that much. So I consider them both mentally and physically fresher than Michigan State is going to be for that game.
Right.
So I'm going Duke. I think it'll be a Duke-Wisconsin finale, and it'll be one of the greatest games in tournament history.
Yeah, that'll be a real good one.
Yeah. Well, that's it, guys. That being said, yeah, we're right on schedule. Let's get the hell out of here.
Right.
As always, we'll be back next week with another episode talking about stuff and things and things and stuff. Baseball. And then Drew and I next week will have a very special pre-opening day episode where we discuss all things Bazball.
I'm so excited.
Very Ooh. Excited. If you guys didn't know, he is a Twins fan. I am a White Sox fan. And we Ooh. Are, of course, division rivals. So it's that will be heated. It will be a fun conversation about what our teams can do to somehow be relevant again this year, because I would really like our rivalry rekindled where it actually matters.
Hey, man, that's what baseball is all about these days, the quick turnaround. You
Very
can make
true.
The right moves, spend the right money in the right places. All you got to do is win 88 games. That's the lucky number. Get 88, slip in, make a run at it. We can do it!
Not so Minnesota. Can we. Let's go, Jeff Samardzija. All right, so we'll be back next week with that. As always, for Steve Cravens.
Thanks for listening.
For Drew Willers.
Thanks, guys.
For the series regular, Christian Schneider.
Help me, Big Ten. You're my only hope.
I'm Tyler Berry, and we'll see y'all next time.